you know, things are not dire in Athens.
You think they are.
Yeah. The debate is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to another episode of the Southern Football Report, presented by Rivertown Running, now open in downtown Bainbridge, Georgia. Brian Howell, hey. First of all, I want to say that between you and Rivertown Running opening in Bainbridge, my fire has been reignited. I'm thinking about getting a new pair of running shoes and getting back into it.
Let's go, dude.
Because, I mean, I can't have you out here running the Road City run and me sitting at home. And, you know, I don't know. I'm encouraged by it.
Let's go to Rivertown and pick something out.
I told my family that I'd be fine with a Rivertown Running gift card for either my birthday or Christmas. I'll go over there and get a pair of shoes. I ain't promising that I'm going to run 6.2 in the Road City run.
We can walk if we have to.
But I am thinking about, at least while it's cool.
Yeah.
Getting back into doing
I
a little bit.
I prefer to run when it's hot.
No.
I want it to be sweltering hot.
No.
Neither. In the middle.
Oh, man. The colder, the better.
Oh, no.
Like
you want to rip your lungs out of your chest.
Real quick, Christopher Warren and I were training for the Boston Mini Marathon. Not the big one in Boston, Mass., but the mini marathon in Boston, Georgia. And it's half marathon. And we had a route, you know, you'd run down Pine Tree and all that. And one night we had to run 10 miles. It was towards the end of our training. And it was sleeting. It was like 38 degrees and sleeting. And it was like the perfect weather for me.
Nah.
The colder, the better.
No, I want it to be like 100 degrees humid.
Just, no.
Yes.
No, I can't stand 70, it when it's that hot.
70. No wind. I hate running in the wind.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's always in your face, man.
Yeah.
Don't matter.
Yeah.
I ran the 4th of July firecracker race down at Mexico Beach.
Man.
And there was wind both ways. Mm-hmm. You're running on the beach, right by the beach. It was.
Oh, gosh. 4th of July.
Yeah, it was hot.
Man. But yeah, Rivertown Running now open in downtown Bainbridge. I've got the itch again. I got to get back into it. I figure that'll help me lose my belly fat.
We got 6 months to get ready.
6 months?
Five and a half.
Yeah.
I guess April, right?
April. Yeah. I could probably do it if I trained for 6 months.
Absolutely. It's a tough race, I hear.
Oh, the hills.
Hill course, yeah.
The hills will get you. Yeah. We used to run them, though.
Whew. Yeah.
Man, I think the last mile is uphill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know if there's a need for an introduction, but let's go ahead and do it anyway. Across the desk and to my left, I've got Brian Howell.
Hey, hey.
Brian's a big Ole Miss fan right now. He hasn't given up allegiances or anything, but he thinks that's a pretty good team. Across the desk and to my right, I've got Kyle Shaver.
We're back.
Kyle, first of all, congratulations to your dad.
Yeah, big night tonight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're recording a little bit early because Kyle's got a ceremony to go to. His dad's being inducted into the Thomasville
Sports Hall of Fame.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, pretty cool for him.
Yes, it is.
I thought he did a great job, too, on the desk at FBC game day.
I heard I was getting ripped on the set. I skipped out
you did
or
skip
whatever.
Out.
Yeah,
that
we definitely caught you out for that.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, we had a great.
I would have rather have been there than where I was.
It's a great event, though.
We're going to hear all about where you were, Kyle.
We'll hear all about it.
First-hand experience of what it was like in the Grove and in Oxford and all of that.
I can fill you in.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just jump right into our review section of the podcast. As we do each week, we take a look back before we take a look forward. And how about that Georgia Tech-Miami game? Miami's been flirting with that all year, haven't they?
I think they would just do. It was coming at some point. Georgia Tech, we said it a couple of times on the podcast, they had the swagger of their head coach. It was just one of those games that Cam Ward couldn't find that next gear to get them over the hump.
Yeah.
And Georgia Tech had it, and that was that's what it was.
Georgia Tech is maybe this is the same perspective that fans in the SEC have of teams like Kentucky or somebody like that, in that they're not going to win a whole bunch of ball games every year, but there are a couple of games every year where Georgia Tech is just going to be the most annoying.
Yeah.
And it's not the Paul Johnson triple option Georgia Tech annoying. It's the we're going to have an 11-minute drive yeah. where we're going to go 19 plays and convert every third down by running the ball. And say what you want to, Miami had the ninth best rush defense in the country going into that
game. And they still could run the ball, yeah.
And Tech ran it for almost 300 yards.
And they knew that Haynes couldn't throw the ball. He's got upper body injury, right?
Yeah.
But they couldn't stop it anyway.
No.
He threw six passes, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He had several good runs, too.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I was surprised. I thought, man, if he's...
Well, they did that to us last year. You remember?
Yeah.
I mean, they had the same game plan.
How do you feel if you're Miami? 2 years in a row, Georgia Tech's the team that ruins your perfect season twice.
So they've got that. That's Miami's kryptonite lately. Tech's always giving them trouble.
Last year they were like 4-0 or 5-0. They should have won.
Yeah.
Should have kneeled it out, but they hand the ball off. He fumbles last year.
Yeah.
Then they throw the bomb with, 2 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And then this year they just flat out beat them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been Georgia Tech and Duke. Yeah. Seriously, that's been Miami's kryptonite over the last 6 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Duke famously beat them on, a kick return that featured like 13 laterals or something like that. It was weird. But that game was reminiscent to me of the first game of the season when Georgia Tech just dominated the line of scrimmage against Florida State, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where they just decided they were going to run the football.
Yeah.
And there was nothing you could do about it.
Yeah. That's what I said. They take that mentality of their head coach, who is an offensive lineman at Tech, kind of has that, rough and tumble attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And they embody that when they want to.
Yeah.
And, they do it well.
They got the bowl eligibility with a couple of games left in the year. I don't expect them to upset Georgia in the last game of the year, but it's certainly a higher probability now to me than it was 2 weeks ago.
That's going
to
be a weird game. We'll talk about it in a few weeks. It's a weird game. It's on a Friday night. Georgia high school playoffs are still going on. How many people, what's the crowd going to be like?
Has Georgia ever played on a Friday night?
Maybe back in the day. I don't have any idea, but it's a Friday night game, right? It's in Athens, which is helpful. But we'll get to that game in a few weeks.
Yeah. Big Buster Faulkner fan. Went to college with Buster at VSU, and he's the OC for Georgia Tech. Yeah.
Still lives in Bogart, though. He still lives close to Athens.
Does he?
His son's a quarterback, I think, for North Oconee, maybe. They're pretty good this year.
But he's a great guy, and I think he's got a bright future.
He coached at Georgia, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Analyst, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he was in the running when Monken left. I don't know how it worked out, but.
Well, I mean, you had Mike Bubba there and Faulkner, So. And I want to say that he took the job. Was it the year before Monken left? I think so. Because he'd had to come back from Tech, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, he's at Tech. Yeah. They got Mike Bobo for us, and we'll see how it goes in
identity.
A few weeks. Yeah,
I mean,
they are who they are. They know who they are.
Yeah,
they also played really well on defense. I thought their linebackers really did their part in slowing down the Miami running game, which made them a little bit more one dimensional.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got Cam Ward, so you think one dimensional ain't so bad, but. I mean, getting after him on that final drive when Miami's got the ball with a chance to go down there and win the game, and I don't even think they converted a first down before Ward, if I'm not mistaken, fumbled at the end of that game.
Yeah,
and Tech recovered.
He's been able to save them in their games against Cal and the games they've struggled in. It wasn't there this time.
Yeah,
that drive where they came up short of the fourth down conversion, they ran the ball like 7 straight times. Got to 4th and 1 and tried some bootleg to his left.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Yeah, I don't know about that."
Yeah, it reminded me of the Penn State play calls down there at the goal line.
you
throw it,
just outsmart yourself maybe sometimes.
Yeah, teams have a tendency to do that in big moments. I've seen Clemson do that last year against Florida State in overtime. They just ran like 3 straight wide receiver screens, and then finally throw it towards the end zone. And it was just poor play calling in a pivotal moment, I think. But, I mean, who are we to criticize play calling? I mean, here we are in a podcast. And those dudes get paid big money to do it. But let's move on. Let's move to a game in the Big Ten where Indiana did about what we thought they would do versus Michigan, and that is win the game, but no blowout there.
Yeah, you said it. It's going to be like an 8, 10, 12-point win, I think, last week. And that's kind of what it was, just an ugly win, but a win nonetheless. And first time they've ever been 10-0 there in Indiana. So,
do you think Indiana found their bowling point up front, or their freeze point, to where the competition became
where it was equal?
It was a level to where they're like, oh, okay, this isn't going to be as easy to run our our normal thing as it might have been.
I didn't watch much of that game. I saw some highlights. I think we'll really find out at noon this week.
It's next week. Yeah.
Oh, it's next week.
Yeah, they got all
Ohio State.
Yeah.
Well, that helps them.
It does.
We'll find out against Ohio State. This year's just not been the year for Michigan. I'm not sure how much confidence they have, and certainly Indiana's riding high.
But. Well, I checked the stats before we came in, and it was a fairly pedestrian game offensively for Indiana. 220 yards passing, about 100 yards on the ground. They did go up like 17-7 or 3 there early, but then Michigan crawled back. We talked about it. They're having a hard time scoring.
Yeah.
If it had been a 37-17 game, I would be like, look out, Ohio State.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I don't know.
We'll see if Indiana can repeat that game plan both on offense and defense versus Ohio State.
Is Ohio State off this week too?
No, Northwestern in Wrigley Field.
So they're off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it last year or the year before where Northwestern fired their coach midseason? And
they fired him like this first Pat Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
The first game of the year, something happened, some allegations or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what Indiana looks like versus Ohio State. But I said in the group chat earlier, I would love to see some drama and upsets. So I would love to see Indiana beat Ohio State and then turn around and lose to Purdue the next week. Yeah. You know,
would be the way this season. This season's just been crazy. In the first year of the 12-team playoff, it certainly has been the perfect year to have it.
Yeah.
And it's kept the regular season interesting much, much longer than it has been the last several years.
Yeah. The debate is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And the uncertainty and like games this week matter and games next week matter before you even get to the championship games. Mm-hmm. All these games are meaning a lot more than they did just last year.
Yeah. Well, especially with teams that now have 2 losses.
Right.
So in years past, you'd be like, man, 2 losses, we're probably out of this thing.
Yeah.
Now it's like, man, we can get in with 2 losses, but we got to win this next one, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely – I think there was some worry that the regular season would be watered down with a 12-team playoff, and I think what it's done is it's just moved the bar back just a little bit for teams that still have hopes to make the playoff. I mean, look, in years past, losing at home to Northern Illinois gets you knocked out of the playoff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or losing at home to 3-6 now, Kentucky, like Ole Miss did, you'd be like, man, they got a horrible loss. But they can certainly make it in with those 2 losses now if they don't slip up again.
Used to, 6 teams had a shot.
Yeah.
Now 16 teams have a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you see the excitement across college football. You see these games are bigger than they would have been. We wouldn't have cared about, some of these games last year.
Devil's advocate.
It's 2 lost games, two lost teams or something.
Yeah. What does it do to the 6-3 guys? The really good teams that might go to the Outback Bowl or the Capital One Bowl.
You're going to have the
are they even going to play?
Not even matter.
Are they even going to play?
They'll matter far less than they did last year. They didn't matter at all then.
Yeah. I think what you've got now is the New Year's 6 bowls matter, whereas last year they didn't. So the Orange Bowl last year, Georgia versus Florida State, it mattered in some ways, but it didn't really matter.
Right.
Now that New Year's 6 Bowl, you got to win it if you want to advance. But the whatever, Pop-Tart Bowl,
The Duke's Mayo Bowl is not going to be
how many players are actually going to play in that game? How many opt-outs are we going to have in those type games?
Yeah.
Well,
but on the other hand of that, though, A lot of you'll have your top 2 guys on those teams, right? They're saying, we're done with this. But a lot of those guys, think about like a South Carolina. A lot of those guys, they need that tape either A, to transfer, or B, to go into the draft, right? They need some more tape for whoever they're going to next, right? And so you might, because now that you have 12 teams going in, you're not going to motivate. I mean, you think about, let's say Georgia misses out on the playoff or LSU misses out on the playoff. You're going to have some guys that are just like, those are playoff teams are bust, right? Every kid on that team feels that way. South Carolina, they probably weren't going into the season thinking playoff or bust. They knew they were probably going to a Duke's Mayo Bowl type game. You might not lose many of them.
The difference is now – the transfer portal, that window opens. It opens
the day after
the college football playoff field is announced.
Yeah.
Wow. So, for example, if somebody
when does it close?
The 28th of December.
Which most of the bowl games will be over by then.
Right. But let's say you get your heart broken and left out of the playoff, and you were thinking about transferring anyway. Go ahead and say, well,
we could have a whole podcast on the transfer portal and when it opens and signing day and all that, because you like.
So this opens before signing day.
Yeah.
Doesn't it reopen in the spring, though?
April 16th.
Okay, so if you're if you're in the playoff conversation and you know you're ready, you're going to transfer.
Yeah,
you play on through, yeah. And then you do it in the spring. Yeah,
but if you're not, you just go ahead probably and transfer so that you get spring practice.
Can you
with your
think
new team.
About these? We're way off topic here, but can you think about the stat? Like who on? Let's just use Georgia for an example. If Georgia's in the playoff, let's say they're number 10 or something like that. Is Kirby concerned about the portal, or has he got guys concerned about the portal during a time when you're prepping for a first round playoff game?
I think you address
that window.
I think you address it head on, and you say, "Look,
we have a
mission. Like, you got the spring to figure that out."
I think a lot of it will be because there's going to be guys in the portal before those playoff games that playoff teams want, and they're going to go ahead and they're going to have to get them. Have to put these NIL packages together. I'm not naive to think that stuff ain't going on right now. Like, I think it's definitely going on right now.
Tampering?
Oh, 100%. All of them.
The Mississippi State coach said this week that he's already having to fight.
On his quarterback?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it's all going on now, but it's just going to be nuts. Like, you're going to have the playoff come out. You're going to have the first little round of bowl games. You're going to have conference championships. You're going to have the portal. You're going to have signing day. All in, like, an 8-day span.
Yeah.
It's like college football's going to explode.
That might be why guys like Kirby just don't seem to have the fire this year, because they're like, man, this is just
too much to manage.
I wonder, man, because I've definitely seen a change.
It's too much for all of them to manage.
Maybe he's pacing himself.
Maybe. He probably have to.
I don't know.
How about that Bama at LSU game?
Mm. What a blowout.
Did you see that?
185 yards rushing and 4 touchdowns?
For one guy.
For Milrow?
Man, yeah. I think we talked about it. If they want that game plan, can you do anything to stop it?
I don't think so.
Who has the personnel?
Somebody's got it.
It ain't us.
I don't know anybody. I mean,
they had so many one-on-ones drawn up with him. Like, it came down to him and a linebacker or him and a safety.
Well, that's what happens when a quarterback can run the ball. You have a hat on a hat. Like, everyone's accounted for. Mm-hmm. You're basically man blocking.
Yeah, but I think if you have let's just say you got a linebacker that you know can keep up with him. And some teams have that. Like, they have that one guy. Mm-hmm. And, all right, Kyle, that's your man.
Yeah.
And if he wins 50% of those battles, then Milrow doesn't run for 4 touchdowns.
In that game, that lead back was taking care of that.
Oh, yeah.
I had not seen that type run game very much.
It was just like power right, power left with Jalen Milrow.
Yeah.
They would fake the lead, you know, fake the handoff to him, and then he'd go find that guy.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting.
A lot of that is just Jalen Milrow. I think he's the best running back in college football.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and that's not a slight to him at all. It's like he's just a really, really good runner.
Yeah. I also think part of it, too, and this is an overarching theme with Brian Kelly's teams at LSU, is they have underachieved on defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if you have a defense that's capable of slowing that offense down a little bit, and an offense that can score too.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to shut Jalen Milrow down.
You saw a little bit of it in the second half of the Georgia game, right, where they came back out of half trying to run on the edges again, and Georgia had decided they weren't going to let them run out there.
Right.
Now, probably a different game plan. You're up, 20-something points, so the game plan is different. Maybe you're not as aggressive, but you saw some people had stopped it. I mean, there was –
They didn't do it against South Florida. Well, they said he's been hurt for about a 5-game stretch with multiple nagging injuries.
But that was before the Georgia game.
And I think that's the risk. Like, if there's one game we've got to win, we're going to run you 15 times.
Right.
If they can get away with not doing it, I'm sure they will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The risk, too, though, is if you have to win the playoff game, just say it's round one, and you got to win that one, and he gets dinged up.
Yeah. They're done.
Well, I mean, it's like using your number one pitcher in the wild card round.
Right.
you're not going to the next round if you don't win the first one. So you got to put all your eggs in the hat, and then we'll worry about the next round tomorrow.
Yeah. He made some good decisions throwing the football in that game, too. He didn't throw for much, but they were all like key third down conversions, like 8 yard, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. And he just kept the chains moving.
They've definitely improved since the USF game.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw him do that last year.
They did that last year, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the one that Kyle saw in person. Georgia on the road, big loss to Ole Miss in this game. I want to know, as a college football fan, what was the experience? Now, I'm not talking about the game.
Yeah.
What was the experience like in Oxford?
If it was, it was a 9 out of 10 with the rain. I think if there was no rain, it far exceeded my expectations as far as atmosphere, even with a muddy grove, right? Even you couldn't really get around very good. It's a cool city. It's a college city. They were obviously hyped up for the game. So all the town was ready. The downtown area was ready. The stores, the bars, the restaurants, they were all ready. The grove is one of the coolest experiences I've ever seen. I mean, you walk through there, I mean, and it's shoulder to shoulder, and they've got chandeliers, and they've got neon lights in their tailgates. I mean, it's – one group was eating on china. It looked like they were eating on fine china. Like, it's
– that's funny.
It's – now, what? I did – so Katie texts Rachel Howell and said, you need to put a wellspring over here. This is the Botox capital of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of that going on there, too.
Oh, I bet.
But no, it was a really cool, the city's a really cool city. My only complaint, my one chief complaint, it's really the same, but two different places. That town is not set up for a large event like that. It's too small. Roads are small. Not enough parking. The town, the stadium, also the same way. The stadium was not prepared for the capacity that it had with all the Georgia fans there. You know, it was a cool stadium in the stadium, but it just wasn't. That was the most difficult part. The most difficult part was just getting in and around the town, in and around the stadium.
Yeah,
but really cool. I'd go back. Cool place.
So I've always wanted to go to a game at Ole Miss. Florida State doesn't play there, so I've never really had a reason to go, but it's on the bucket list.
Yeah, it's a bucket list place for sure.
So how would the town compare to, like, size-wise and the way they all get into it? How would it compare to any other games you've been to? Like, is it like Auburn or?
No. So what was different about Ole Miss to me is that the school, the community, the town, like the seems like the city government, they lean into the tailgating, like, we're going to make that all, that's all it's about, right? Whereas, like, I mean, we go to Athens nearly every weekend. Athens seems to not lean into it. They put restrictions on it. You can't do this here, but you can do it over here, and you can't do it here, and you can't be here, and you can't be there, but you can be over here. Ole Miss doesn't care. Oxford does not care. They want you to tailgate everywhere you can tailgate. They want it to be packed. They want you to have grills. They want you to have coolers. They want you to have all the things. I mean, they bring in all the trash cans and all the things for you. So that they really lean into it, which I think changes it. And because the town's so small and it's just the college, it's not like Auburn, right, where Auburn's just spread out everywhere. Or, I mean, even Athens, you got tailgates all over town. In Oxford, it's all right there, like in one spot. Now, I've never been to a game at LSU, but I hear that's similar to this. So they just lean into kind of the tailgating scene. Bama's kind of the same. They lean into, like, the tailgating area right there by the stadium. I think it's called the Quad or something. Like, it's just real packed. They just do a good job of leaning into hey, we're just going to take it. This grass is going to get ruined, and we'll just fix it. Yeah.
So my tailgate experience, I've been to games in Athens. I've been to games in Tallahassee. In Athens, it seems like the tailgating is a lot more concentrated, like, on campus.
Yeah.
You could set up behind the, you know, animal science building or whatever, right. You know, and there's all these different places where you can tailgate. Whereas in Tallahassee, it's mainly around the stadium. And then once you get away from that, you're in folks' yard.
Right. Yeah. One thing that we talked about, because we met Paul Feinbaum, which was really cool. We were on TV.
Oh, yeah,
behind Paul Feinbaum.
Your dad's real proud of that.
I told him to check it out, check out the podcast. I don't know if he did or not. Maybe if you're listening, Paul, thanks for the pick last week. anyway, So that was that ended at 6 o'clock central. Well, so all the signs, you have to get out of the Grove by six, like parking out of the Grove. Well, we're pulling out. It's like 6:05 out of the parking lot. And here come these trucks, y'all, with tents. And like, think about like a, like what you would put like a dump trailer. They're stacked up with bag tents and chairs and tables. And they're pulling in here, and it's like an army of ants just setting these tents up. At 6 o'clock the night before the game. At 10 o'clock, if you, like, and these people, they don't set up their own tents. They have people come set them up for them. At 10 o'clock at night, the people can come in and start tailgating at 10 p.m. the night before the game. All right. In Athens, you can't do anything until 7 a.m. the day of the game.
Right.
So like, I mean, people were bringing their food, they were bringing their drinks, their coolers, their grills. It was set up at 10 p.m. at night. They just wake up and go to their tailgate. Well, in Athens, you're having to get it all together and do it all.
Do they wake up or they just stay there?
They might just stay there.
Yeah.
I didn't stay there. Might have stayed there.
That's been a chief complaint among Florida State fans over the years is, you know, if it's a 7:30 game, years past, you couldn't set up till like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't we set up at 7 a.m. and be here all day?
Georgia does. 7 a.m. in Athens, no matter the game time, is when you can set up. But, I mean, they were fully set up at 10 o'clock at night.
That's awesome. My tailgating experience in Athens has always been in the same spot. It seemed like it was the Bainbridge spot. You know, even, you know.
I've probably been to that one.
Yeah. Saw Corey Smith there one time. He was tailgating next door. All right, so – obviously, that was a big game in the college football landscape. Big game for Georgia. They didn't have to win it. You know, things are not dire in Athens.
You would think they are.
But it was – Georgia could have used that one, especially if they wanted to go to the SEC championship game.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's the big takeaway there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to a little bit of a preview segment of the show where we look ahead at games this weekend. And truthfully, the schedule this weekend's we've got LSU on the road at Florida. LSU's only a 4-point favorite. Don't pick it yet. We'll pick it later. Is DJ Lagway back? I think is the big question. And he's practiced this week.
Yeah.
If Lagway's back, to me, that's a similar style quarterback to what they just struggled with. He's not Jalen Milroe.
Yeah. He's also still banged up, I think. What did Billy Napier say this week? They're going to have to protect him a little bit.
Yeah.
Let him do what he slides. He don't see.
Let him do what he can do, you know.
They've got to win two more.
To go
to a bowl game.
Yeah.
And they've got LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State. So you figure they're going to win the last one. But they need to win one of these next two.
They're not going to beat into one of those teams.
Any of those three teams?
No, the next two.
Oh, okay.
I don't think.
I think it depends on Lagway. Like, if he's healthy.
Yeah.
They can beat LSU.
If he's throwing dimes like he threw against the Dogs before he got hurt, I mean, he could be a game changer for sure. I mean, obviously, LSU, they're probably beat up. Like was Brian Wynn, so they all got bruises right after that Bama game.
Deep bone bruises, boy.
I was surprised at Florida's response last week at Texas.
Well, I mean, look at their quarterback situation. I just don't think they believed in – I don't think they went to Austin believing they could win with that quarterback.
Yeah.
And that goes a long way, man.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe Texas is finding their groove offensively too.
Maybe. I think they knew DJ wasn't going to play. They went out there with a Yale transfer at quarterback. The rest of the team knew.
Let's just see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, those guys see that guy in practice.
Yeah.
And remember, he's the third stringer.
Yeah. I know.
He wasn't even supposed to be out there.
Yeah. Brian, you said that the other day. He's like, man, I just came here to go to grad school.
It's like, I'm 188 pounds over here.
What do you mean I got to play against Georgia? Yeah. I think that'll be a fun game to watch. LSU at Florida on Saturday. I think it's an afternoon game. Yeah, 3:30 p.m. on ABC.
Yeah, that used to be. I mean, not long ago, that was the cleat throwing game, right? That cost Florida eventually.
LSU's beat them. Is it 9 out of 10?
Wow. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
Wow. I'm not writing Florida off in this one yet.
No,
especially if DJ's back and if he's healthy.
He seems like a good guy. I'm kind of pulling for him. I mean, to
be careful with that. He's a Gator.
Seems like a good guy.
All right. How about this one's going to get Brian Howell excited. Missouri at South Carolina.
Ooh. What time is that game?
So this game is the 4:15 game on the SEC Network. And Kyle said, you know, it's liable to be dark.
It'll be dark in the second quarter.
You know, with the time change.
Yeah.
I just, the reason I asked that is because, I mean, South Carolina at night, that crowd.
I think South Carolina's on a roll. I think they're actually hot. A team that not many people would want to face right now, especially at home.
I looked at some, I was saying this yesterday. I looked at like what the BCS would have been if they still had the BCS before last week's games.
Yeah.
And they had South Carolina at 13th in the old BCS computers.
Well, they're going to end up playing 7 ranked teams.
South Carolina's favored by 14.
That's a lot of points. Yeah. Missouri, that's a lot of points.
Missouri's got a backup quarterback playing, right?
I don't
know. That's a question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. That front 7's going to eat him alive.
Yeah, if that's the case, I mean, if they're taking a backup quarterback to South Carolina in what's eventually going to be a night game, yeah.
I think them and Ole Miss probably have the best front 7s in the SEC right now.
Are you going to say the same thing about Tennessee in just a little bit, too?
No.
That's what the group text says.
They're a step behind Ole Miss.
One step behind.
Yeah.
It could be. I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, typically your best front 7s have been Bama, Georgia. You want to say LSU, but usually
not in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not the case this year. Both Bama and Georgia, I think, have taken a step back.
Yeah.
And other teams have taken a step up.
It's a distribution of wealth.
Yeah. I mean, it really is.
Like talent wealth, but also actual dollar wealth.
Yeah. And I mean, Lane Kiffin built his team on the defensive line this year to beat Georgia.
With the portal and NIL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which
you can do it.
It's fine if it works. You know,
and South Carolina did some of it too.
Well, I already heard they're putting together a pretty big package for the freshman defense.
Well, and they signed him. I mean, he's a stud.
Let's move on from that one to the game in Athens Saturday night. Has it really been almost a year, like 365 days since Georgia has hosted a night game?
371 days.
By
the time the game rolls around.
Who was it?
Whoever it was this time last year.
Ole Miss last year. That was the only game I went to last year.
What a difference a year makes.
Ole Miss against Georgia was at 7:30 last year. Game day was there. It was raining, kind of the same thing. It was raining, and that would have been this past weekend, right, as far as how the calendar fell. And then, so 371 days since Georgia. But the craziest part, Georgia's only played three.
I didn't realize
home
that.
Home games all year long.
Brian said that in the group text the other day. He said, dude, it's been like 37 days since we played at home. And I thought, really? How could that be?
Yeah, somebody said, I saw a picture of the stadium and the field on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. And somebody said, the field looks great. And so I said it all to you. We ain't played on it in 6 months.
I would have loved to have been in that scheduling meeting.
Dude, Georgia got hosed.
Absolutely.
Georgia got hosed this year with the schedule.
And they asked Kirby this week about it.
You can't look at the board and say, oh, you're going to go to Austin, Tuscaloosa, and Oxford.
Yeah, in a five-week span.
And expect everybody to feel good about it.
Yeah.
Now, you're absolutely right. Georgia got hosed. They also have had some bad injury luck. So I think in some ways Georgia's been unlucky this year.
Yeah.
But there have been years where Georgia has played a really easy schedule.
Last year.
Like, was it last year or the year before?
Last year was pretty easy.
Back when they had the East-West, and Georgia just, you know, they had to be.
Well, if Auburn's down,
right,
it's going to
if Auburn's
be
down
that way.
And Tech's down, there's two games you're going to play every year that you just inherently have bad teams.
And Florida was down.
Florida was down. Tennessee was down for a while.
We started with Clemson, though.
You're talking about?
Last year?
No, last year.
Who did we start with last Clemson? Year?
I know that I'm thinking back to, like, maybe 21 or something like that. Where Georgia's schedule was like, well, yeah, they're going to Atlanta because they're going to go undefeated in conference play because they're playing, you know, their toughest
Auburn,
game.
You had Auburn that had Brian Harsin was their head coach.
Yep.
You had.
But we've only gone undefeated one time.
Right. But South Carolina, but we always played daggum Alabama.
Yeah.
South Carolina was down, right? They were not great. They had a walk-on quarterback that was a GA that made it to be a quarterback that played that year. Like, there's been a lot of weird things that have happened, and Georgia certainly got got theirs this year with the schedule they got dealt.
Yeah, it was 21. I'm looking at it. So that was the year they started with Clemson. That was the DJU game. Yeah. Georgia won 10-3.
Yeah.
But then after that, they played UAB, South Carolina, at Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Missouri, Tennessee, Charleston Southern, Georgia Tech, and then that's the year they lost to Bama in the SEC championship game. Now, some of those teams ended up being better by the time they played them.
Right.
Like, for example, Arkansas was ranked in the top 10 when they played that game, but Georgia won it 37-0.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
that was the 22 schedule.
No, this is 21.
21, okay.
This is 21.
I was looking at last year. I was thinking we started non-conference, but it was UT Martin, Ball State, Carolina, UAB. Yeah.
That was when we were supposed to open with Oklahoma that
made
us change it.
And everybody was busting our chops about it, but there was nothing we could really do about it.
That's right. Yeah. So 22 was the year you started with Oregon.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so listen, Georgia got hosed on the schedule this year.
But it is what it is. I mean, you got to play who you got to play. And you don't hear Kirby complaining about the schedule too much outside of the length of time between home games. That's just a long – and he even didn't acknowledge, and this is just inherently how it works for Georgia and for Florida. If you play your rivalry game at a neutral site in the middle of the season, there is the chance that you're gonna have a stretch of weeks, because you also have an off week in there every year before Georgia-Florida. So you're going to have a stretch of weeks where if you played away before Georgia-Florida and you play away after Georgia-Florida like Georgia did this year, mm-hmm. you're the home team in air quotes for Florida game, but that home game means nothing because you're in Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's.
I'm looking at their schedule from last year. They started with four straight home games last year because of the Oklahoma thing, which I guess would have probably still been a home game.
No, it was an away game.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they played 1, 2, 3, 4 road games total last year.
And then one in neutral site.
One of those is a neutral site, but those four road games were at Auburn, at Vanderbilt, at Tennessee, at Georgia Tech.
So 1 year we get 7 games, 1 year we get 5.
Basically.
Because
if you don't have but like this year we would have had 6 if you don't have Clemson in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so tired of playing football games in Atlanta.
Those things, let me tell you, those season kickoff games versus a big-time opponent, those are going to go away.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
They're going away.
Absolutely. There's no. We talked about it last night. There's no sense in playing it. It doesn't do anything for you.
Uh-uh.
If LSU had opened the season with Ball State instead of USC,
they'd be no worse off.
They'd be no worse off. They'd be a two-loss team
they'd
right
be
now.
Be better off.
Right. They'd be a two-loss team right now.
In the eyes of the committee.
Yeah. Wouldn't matter.
They're no worse off.
Except no worse, but definitely better. They'd be ranked higher. They'd be a two-loss team.
Yeah.
I don't think the committee's – I don't think losses help you at all. You know, we talk about good losses and bad losses.
Yeah.
I think losses are just losses right now. Are y'all getting that feeling?
No, I get the feeling that they value the loss.
I think they'll tell you, man, that was a tough game. That was a hard loss.
Yeah.
But does it help?
I don't think it should help. I think if you lose, you lose.
No matter the opponent?
Yeah. That's why I don't think you ought to be playing USC to start the year.
All right. Anybody, let's say there's 2 1-loss teams. Let's say Texas and – I'm going to use Notre Dame, but say Texas and Notre Dame. They're both 1-loss teams. Are you looking at Texas and Notre Dame based on their losses, if they're just losses, and saying Texas and Notre Dame are the same?
Then they turn to the quality wins.
Right, but the losses, if we're talking about just the losses, Texas lost to Georgia.
Sure.
Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois.
Right.
Those losses are inherently different.
Yeah.
And they're going to say Texas is a better team because they only lost to Georgia. They didn't lose the...
Different people dissect resumes in different ways.
Oh, yeah.
I've been noticing. And
yeah, yeah.
There's just so much going on.
Yeah, I just don't think it's worth the risk of playing. Like, it used to be it was a money grab. We're going to go make $5 million.
Yeah.
And the money's not it is, but it ain't an issue anymore.
No.
Like, and the truth is, even if you win that game, even if you win week one, Georgia beat Clemson to start the year, it's not helping you at all come November.
No.
Just like, I always go back to a Florida State example. Beating LSU last year didn't help FSU at all.
You're right.
It didn't.
I mean, it made FSU fans happy, and you know, we pointed to that.
It might have springboarded your season a little bit internally on the team, but as far as your ranking goes and where you wind up, that week one game is, I mean, Clemson's not no worse off now because they lost to Georgia. They're worse off because they lost to other teams.
Yep.
Right? Like, if their only loss was to Georgia, they'd still be up there. That week one, it wasn't killing them.
But if Clemson had played Ball State to start the season.
Yeah, then they're two lost teams.
And won that game, they're still in the playoff picture.
Yeah.
Like, losing to Georgia did not
they
get them.
They still are in the playoff picture.
I guess if they win their conference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our overrated, underrated segment. All right, we'll start. Y'all have already seen mine. I made the mistake of sending you my overrated, underrated ahead of time, but we might be on the same track.
Yeah.
Kyle, who do you have as overrated?
My overrated team was Texas. Their schedule just hasn't been – it's not there. It's not there for me. And they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Texas is a bad team. I just don't know that it warrants that ranking.
Their best win right now is Vanderbilt.
Yeah. I mean – my other overrated team is still Penn State. I feel like I say that every week, but yeah. It's still the same thing, right? The combined record for their teams, I think, is like not even a winning record.
Yeah,
for the teams they've played. So it's tough. But like you said, people evaluate strength of a team differently, and some people think that those are two really good teams.
Yeah, I'm gonna move Indiana to my overrated at five. I mean, just. We talked about what happened last week, you know, when they met a little bit more substance up front,
yeah.
Slowed them down a little bit. I think we're going to see that.
But they did what they needed to do.
They did.
And that is win that game.
They did. Like absolutely. I
was halfway expecting them to lose that game and us to all go, okay, yeah. All right, well, the fun's over. But they actually won the game.
Yeah.
And they're still in great position.
Well, thank you. So there's something to going undefeated.
Sure.
No matter how absolutely. You do it and who you play. They're all still, whenever if they're paid or not paid, they're all still 18 to 22-year-olds
yeah.
that have life and things going on. It's something to go undefeated.
Absolutely.
And pat them on the back for going undefeated thus far.
Yeah. It's first 10-win season in school history.
Mm. Yeah.
And they've done it 10 in a row.
Yeah.
All right. I've got SMU is underrated. I haven't like fleshed this out yet, but I think if you look around the country at teams that have one loss or – less, and you look at their quarterback's age, like the age of their quarterback. SMU's playing, I think, a sixth-year
oh, wow.
starter at, or sixth-year player at quarterback. That goes a long way when you yeah. need a third and six, right?
Yeah.
Or you
he's
know,
seen it all, right?
Right. And, I mean, you look at Dylan Gabriel at Oregon, you know,
yeah.
Bo Nix last year being as old as he was. I mean, the experience.
Stetson Bennett.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't equal – winning,
right.
You could take a DJU.
Yeah,
that's a super experienced guy. But when you put them surrounded by other good players, I think SMU's a good football team that's probably going to win the conference. I mean, it's my pick for the ACC championship right now.
I listened to their beat writer the other day on the radio, and they did what Ole Miss did on the D-line. They went out and got some transfers as well and really beefed up that front.
Yeah.
And it's paying off.
Yeah. And Rhett Lashley is a good coach, and he actually said what all the other fans of schools in the ACC have said. And he's like, hey, yeah. man, how come when Miami loses to Georgia Tech, it's because the league is not good.
Yeah, I heard him.
But when Ole Miss loses to Kentucky, it's because the league is deep.
Yeah,
and I mean it's a fair question because if you look at their resumes, I mean SMU's resume is just as good as Texas's.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's a perception of recruiting over the last 5 years that we're gonna have to move past in the age of the transfer portal.
If Arch Manning was the backup quarterback at SMU right now, mm-hmm. so the Arch Manning effect, in addition to the Quinn Ewers effect, I mean he's a star on his own. But when you look at that quarterback room in Austin. You're like, well, man, that's a team full of stars.
Yeah.
None of us even know the quarterback's name at SMU. Yeah.
I think it's going to be peaks and valleys for yeah. a lot of programs year to year from here on out.
Yeah.
You're going to assemble this squad, and you're going to ball out, and then it's all going to fall apart.
Oh, yeah.
It's up and down, and there's going to be some that hit it twice in a row maybe.
Right. We talked about it with Ole Miss before we started recording. They got to rebuild again. If they want to sustain that success, they got to rebuild again that same defensive line.
Well, theoretically, what you do is you take the success from this year and
you parlay it into next year, right?
You parlay it into a good recruiting class, and you say, hey, transfer, look at what we did with this dude. You come over and do it. And Florida State did that in some ways with, you know, going from Jermaine Johnson to Jared Verse. Like, the reason they got Jared Verse is because of the success they had with Jermaine Johnson. The problem is the drop-off from after Jared Verse to Marvin Jones Jr. I mean, he just ain't Jared Verse. No. Jared Verse might win NFL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I think you better bring that recruiting hall, that transfer hall, with a very good freshman class.
Yeah.
Because the twos who you jumped with that transfer,
they're
out of here.
Out,
so then next year you're playing young again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a two-edged sword, man. And you can definitely win that way this year. Mm-hmm. It remains to be seen.
Well, which is why you see these teams getting, they're getting these general managers right on staff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or that guy, Barton Simmons, right, mm-hmm. of Vandy, like, he's tasked with building, like, their 3 to 5 year strategy of, like, acquiring talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it's through the portal or through high school recruiting or whatever it might be, junior college recruiting. And let's talk about that for a second. Junior college recruiting has gone away.
Yeah, it has.
Because the portal's there. Mm-hmm. So you don't even go to get junior college guys anymore.
Yeah, that used to be the dude that you go get when you need.
Yeah, like another offensive lineman that has some experience.
Or you place him there.
Yeah.
Right. And hope that he comes back.
Mm-hmm. Well, my underrated team is my Dogs, and it's going to sound like a homer, right?
No way.
But 2 years in a row, who is the team that's been punished the most for their loss? Right? Georgia loses last year.
Oh, last year, yeah.
To Alabama, first team to ever fall from one to out, right? And I get it. Florida, I get all that stuff.
Yeah. Both teams got hosed last year.
Right. But, first team ever in the playoff era to go from number one to out of the playoff due to one loss in the conference championship. And then this year, you're number three, you lose to a ranked opponent at home, and you drop 9 spots.
We dropped farther than Miami did. We were ranked above Miami. Same type loss.
To a non-ranked Miami. To a non-ranked team. Now, granted,
we fell farther.
The two teams that are ahead of us with 2 losses are the 2 teams that beat us, Alabama and Ole Miss, which is right. That's certainly rightfully placed, mm-hmm. right? But what's the story to Georgia? You better not ever lose.
Well,
because they're going to knock you down. I mean, I get it. You've been at the top of the mountain. That's what happens, right? What Kirby says, the winds, blows harder at the top. But, like, I don't know how you justify it outside of the fact that the two teams in front of us are the two teams that beat us.
Yeah. Just teams that hadn't lost and one loss. I mean,
there's
you got to give them their due.
Right? So you've got Indiana still got to play to Ohio State. You've got Georgia, Tennessee. They can certainly rectify any ill will that the committee sees in Georgia this week.
This must win. This must win out. That's all there is to it.
That's what it is.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's that way for everybody ranked in front of Georgia.
Yeah.
With the exception of, maybe Indiana because they're undefeated. But everybody with at least one loss, they've got to keep winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can't really sustain. Maybe Tennessee can. Maybe Tennessee can lose to Georgia and still make the playoff.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee there. Let's move on to our pick section. By the way, I just want to say, last week I went 4-1. You guys both went 1-4.
Dude, I'm fading fast.
The standings are as follows. Brian Howell, you are 20-21 on the season. Kyle Shaver, you are 19-22 on the season.
Mm.
Brian Wynn still sits at 12-13. He's working too hard these days. Yeah. I'm getting close. I am now 17-24.
He's pulling tire.
I am 17-24 on the season, which I don't know by percentage. I guess that probably still puts me in last place. But
hey, we never discussed what's on the line here.
No,
we didn't.
Like,
did we?
For who wins or who finishes in last place.
Gift certificate from Rivertown Running, maybe?
There you go.
Sure, why not? I think it's a great idea. All right, let's move on to our picks then. All right, let's see. Brian Howell, Kyle Shaver, Dustin Dowdy. All right, we need to do this quickly. Mizzou at South Carolina. South Carolina's a 14-point favorite.
Bunch of points, but I'm going to take South Carolina there on a roll.
Okay. Kyle?
I'll take South Carolina as well.
Mm.
I'm not sure that Missouri's got it.
Man, 14 points is so much.
Backup quarterback.
Yeah, give me South Carolina. All right, LSU at Florida. Florida is a 4-point underdog.
I'll take LSU.
I'm going to do the same.
Me too. All right. Here's one that you're going to probably have to do some research on if you haven't already. Boston College at SMU. SMU's a 19-point favorite versus this aggravating Boston College team. Now, Boston College no longer has Castellanos.
Transfer portal today.
I knew he went missing or left the program.
So, supposedly, that it was, you know, a contentious situation where he didn't want to leave the program, but some sort of backstory there. But, yeah, he's looks like he's entering the transfer portal. And, by the way, Florida State is one of the schools that looks like it's going to be in it for him, which
would
be
great. He's a good player, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, he's athletic. Yeah. He's torn Florida State up 2 years in a row. Yeah. Former Ware County Gator.
That's right.
But 19 points.
19 points is so many points.
I'm going to go with them because you pumped up SMU in quarterback change.
All right. SMU. I'm taking SMU as well.
I'll take SMU. Too much turmoil in Boston.
We got to disagree at some point, guys. All right. Tennessee at Georgia. Georgia is a 10-point favorite. Do we know if Nico's playing or not playing? This spread makes me think he's not.
Man,
I want to know what Vegas knows.
So the Bear came out first, right?
Yeah,
he started
so he
on this
playing.
And he wasn't playing. And he talks to folks.
Yeah.
And he's in protocol. If it's like the NFL, you've got to pass a series of tests. And I don't know if the doctor's from Knoxville or if he's unbiased, but
yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine he's practicing.
Is Georgia going to cover the 10?
I said I wasn't picking it against them again.
Okay. So you're taking the dogs to cover.
Yeah.
Kyle.
I got chastised for that.
Dogs at night and at home. I got to take them the points.
Man, I'm not going to catch up if I keep taking the same as y'all. I can't pick against Georgia at night against potentially a backup quarterback coming off of a loss like they just lost. Yeah, I just can't. No, I'm taking Georgia in this one. All right, who do you got on upset alert? I've got LSU on upset alert on the road at Florida. If DJ plays, I haven't been impressed with LSU this year. So
I'm going to put Oregon on upset alert at Wisconsin.
Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
At Wisconsin, I think he's a good coach.
I'm still going to put him on upset alert just because of the lack of games.
Okay. All right, Kyle.
I've got Colorado on upset alert.
Mm.
Utah, no, Cam Rising.
They're on like their fourth quarterback.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't like Colorado.
Colorado could win the Big 12.
Yeah.
And make the play. I mean, they're a two-loss team.
It's a noon game. I got Colorado on upset alert against Utah. Utah's 4-5. Colorado's number 17. 7-2.
Vegas thinks BYU needs to be on upset alert.
Another interesting game, too, is Clemson at Pitt.
Yeah.
Clemson's a 13-point favorite at Pitt.
You want to pick that one?
We can.
All right.
If we are picking it, I'm taking Pitt and the points.
Okay. Pitt.
Is Pitt down a quarterback?
I have no idea.
I'm going to take Clemson because I think they find their way back in the ACC party before it's over with.
Yeah, give me Clemson. They win by 14. Two-touchdown win on the road. It's hard to win on the road in the ACC.
It is.
Just ask Mario Cristobal.
It is.
All right. Real quick, let's look at this top 12. So we don't have to pick our top 12 anymore because we actually have the real one from the College Football Playoff Committee. But let's talk the top 12 presented by Tallahassee Orthopedic Clinic. I think we need to remember that there are two different lists. So there's the College Football Playoff Top 25.
Yeah.
And from that top 25, then they fill out their bracket.
Let me tell you what. The top 12 does not matter. The bracket list is what matters.
The bracket is what matters. But the only way you get in the bracket
you
are.
Yeah, but like Georgia could be number 12 and nobody cares because you're out.
Yeah, but which is what's going on this week.
Right.
They're ranked 12th, but Boise State would jump them.
Right.
And by the way, this is a critical point that I have completely missed all year. The first four seeds are not guaranteed to go to Power Four conference champions.
It's the highest ranked conference champions.
Right. So if you have upsets in conference championship games, so let's say BYU loses to Colorado in the Big 12 championship game, and Colorado goes into that game ranked 17th.
Yeah.
They don't automatically jump to fourth or jump to the four seed.
Right.
They just get into the playoff. And it's possible that a team like Boise State is a conference champ. that's ranked ahead of the Big 12 or ACC champ, or, you know, let's just say that all the stars align and LSU makes it in and upsets, say, Texas in the SEC championship game. Now you got a three-loss SEC champ that might not be ranked higher than Boise State or somebody like that, BYU, if they were to continue to go undefeated. Because obviously the committee does place value on being undefeated.
Yeah.
As evidenced by Indiana being where they are right now.
Yeah, the top 25 makes the bracket hard to I think for the casual fan and for myself, it throws you for a loop when you're comparing the two.
Yeah.
And right. What can and the things that can't happen in the bracket, like that you see here.
Right.
Like, that can't happen.
When I think, too, the show, right, the rankings show, they're just taking whoever the highest ranked person is from that conference
and putting them as the conference champ.
They're just assuming that that's the conference champ. That's all they can do, right? Mm-hmm. All they can do is assume they don't know. But so much is going to change that conference championship weekend based off who beats who and who's in the championship games and who's not.
And what you go into that weekend ranked.
Yeah.
Because if you go into that weekend ranked, you know, eighth.
Yeah.
And there are multiple upsets.
Well, are they going to punish a loss to the if you get in the championship game, how are they going to punish that loss?
Everybody's in agreement pretty much that conference championship games are not going to disqualify you for the most part.
But I think they should if they qualify you. If they can qualify you, why can't they disqualify you?
I don't think that you're going to lose in your championship game and anybody else in your conference get in and you not. Now, if you're in a conference that only one of you is going, sure. Say the Big 12. They may have two. More than likely, it's going to be one, the winner. But I would say in the SEC, if there's four teams going, three ain't jumping the loser.
Yeah, I don't know. It's different right, this year because you have 12 instead of four.
It's a game that nobody else has to play.
Do this. Tennessee right now is in line. Even if they lose, they still have I read something today. They've got an inside track into the – if they lose to Georgia, they still have a pretty good shot of getting to the championship game, even with a loss to Georgia, because of who their head-to-heads are with and all the things. It's too crazy. But let's just use this as an example. Tennessee loses to Georgia. They go play Texas or A&M. Who cares? And they lose in the SEC championship. Let's say Georgia's 11th. They beat Tennessee. Tennessee is a two-loss team without the SEC championship loss. Now they're a three-loss team. Do you not take them out of the playoff?
In that scenario, probably. It depends on what else happens.
There's so much.
So many scenarios.
Yeah, there are.
I think we're going to see some chaos on championship weekend. I think you might see teams like, I don't know, like Boise State lose their conference championship game, and like they were a shoe-in for the playoff because Army was the next closest one.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they've lost. Now Army's in.
And then Army has to play after the – like Army-Navy game is after that.
Right. or you know, an LSU or somebody upsets a Texas in the SEC championship game, or I don't know, a Colorado – an Indiana – you know, beats Ohio State but loses to Purdue and then beats Oregon in the conference championship game. I mean, there's so many scenarios that could happen that are feasible this year. Yeah. And we've just been assuming that 1 through 4 are your Big 10, SEC, Big 12, ACC champs. But that's not the deal.
Right.
How many times have we seen a West Virginia or an Oregon go down back in the day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All they had to win was their rivalry game.
Yep.
And it got too tight for them.
I mean, you look right here at the top 25, the actual ranking itself. I mean, Tulane's creeping back in there. Yep. They're at 25. Yep. Auburn's in there. I mean, Army's
shout
in there
at 20,
24. Then the next, I guess the next non-Power 5 team is Boise at 13. So, I mean, you only have three teams that are non-Power 5 in the top.
Yeah, I'm all for the upsets. I'm all for the chaos. Like, bring it on. My team ain't in it now. And so if my team were in it, I'd be like, oh, no.
Popcorn.
No upsets. Like, I want my team to win and get in. But now that I don't have to worry about that, I'm all for it, man. That's been the Southern Football Report presented by Rivertown Running in Bainbridge. Thank you so very much for tuning in. You can hear the Southern Football Report on the Flint Media family of radio stations on Saturday mornings. You can also download it and take it with you as a podcast on your favorite podcast app, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Thank you so very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.